Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are top of the league. I said we are top of the league in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Yes, that's right. It's 2 out of 2 for our gallant musketeers, which has led us to the top of the table and being all very much 4-1. What odds on our game against West Ham on Saturday being for all? Our victory at Molineux also saw Solly March become the league's leading scorer in front of the watching England manager. So could a call-up be on the cards for September's internationals? Speaking of internationals, it wasn't to be for our brave Lionesses, who came second to a decent Spain side in the Women's World Cup final. However, it was a tournament that really caught the imagination, which can only have a positive knock-on effect for our She-Girls. Let's hope that the women's team get to play more often at the Amex. Doubleheader, anyone? Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Jason Thackeray and also Tom Hyland. Happy new season, guys. Great to see you. It's been a good start to the season, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's been above average. It's been all right. Nothing to kind of complain about so far.
I mean, should we just call it quits now with 36 games to go? Should we just cancel the season?
I think we should, yeah. Just freeze it there.
We're not Worthing.
It was an interesting weekend. Obviously we made the gag all for one and all one for all. Maybe that could happen at the weekend, but it's for us to score 8 goals in the opening 2 games, it's just a continuation on from last season, really, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, and I think what's brilliant to see is, again, we've sold over £200 million in players. Ridiculous kind of amount, and yet we just take it in our stride. I think Billy Gilmore stepped up at the weekend, and just the way it's flowing through the team still is remarkable, really. Just I think over the last 3 or 4 seasons, just the way that we've dealt with losing our so-called best players, the system just churns on and we keep moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Jason, it was a good weekend for one of our players who has been attracting interest. I mean, we're going to talk about the transfer window a little bit later on. But there were some interesting comments from Garth Crooks in regards to Karu Mutoma when he picked him in his team of the week.
Didn't he say he was a natural Manchester United player and he should be replacing Anthony or something?
Good grief.
I'm not allowed to swear on this, am I?
No, you're not. I'd understand it if you did. You know, we'll buy ourselves a new bleep machine just for this show, I think.
Yeah, well, I only needed Garth Crooks, to be honest with you, Al.
Yeah, I mean, he is the Fabrizio Romano of TV punditry.
I think that's harsh on Fabrizio.
He's not that bad. He's not that bad.
I mean, that is a dream team of Fab and Garth, isn't it? Party on, Garth. No, it's not. Yeah, I think he also said he's so good I can't believe he's still on the South Coast. What utterly patronising tosh. Have you seen the table, Garth? You know, all right, it's 2 games. It means nothing. It's in that sense, absolutely. But we are clearly, certainly for the time being and on current form, and when I say current form, I mean the last season and a half, a top 10 side. Top 6, yes, but certainly top 10 side. I don't think we dropped as low as 10th last season. And that's some of that is down to the retention of some of our better players. But we're not there to feed Chelsea and Man U and Spurs. We're not there to service their whims and needs. We're actually trying to make a genuine, legitimate attempt to actually bust into that top 6. Newcastle are doing it by throwing obscene amounts of money at it. We're doing it. I suppose that the reason that people are sort of appreciating our model is because we're not throwing money at it. And yet here we are still, punching above our weight. But for someone to turn around and just say, well, OK, the players that you've got, they really need to be somewhere else. I mean, has he not looked at, with the exception of those that went to Arsenal, has he not looked at those that have left the club and realised the whole concept of square pegs and round holes?
Tom?
I mean, on that, I just, the thing that really bugs me is this whole notion that we're a selling club. I just don't actually believe we are a selling club, because if you're a selling club, you sell multiple players every year and it keeps going in and out, in and out. What we do is we sell one, maybe two players at very, very good value for us, where we generally have ready-made replacements. Okay, Caicedo, we probably don't have a replacement for his style of play quite at the moment, but I'm sure that's something that will be fixed. So I just don't buy this notion that we're a selling club, and find it really frustrating, actually, because I think what we are is we're a sustainable club, and there's a difference there.
Yeah, Tom, I don't think that selling clubs sell players for like 115 million quid. That's generally Galacticos that go for that sort of money. And it's which I actually think that, okay, so Caicedo, despite his how he got on at the weekend, I think he will go on and be one of the best players in the world, certainly in that position.
Yeah, but I mean, if we were a selling club, then Caicedo would have gone for 50 million. McAllister would have gone for 25 million. It's not quite a fire sale, but you know, you do it in order that you survive. Now, that's not to say that Tony couldn't do with the money, that the club couldn't do with the money, but provided it gets reinvested elsewhere and goes on the things that it needs to, as the word that Tom used there, sustain the club, then all well and good. But like you say, one or two per window, and for, you know, money that is actually in any other walk of life, absolutely eye-watering. It's the other thing that comes across. Old Brighton, you know, they buy low and they sell high. Such a well-run club. And you think, well, that's page one of your business maxims, isn't it? It's no, there's so much more than what you see on the field and the recruitment to running a well-run club like Brighton Hove Albion. What you're seeing is the culmination of a club being well run and building to where we're at over the past 10 years or so. But that doesn't mean to say that we haven't always been like it. It's just now we're seeing the fruits of it.
Yeah, Tom?
I think that Jason Steele is a perfect example of just how we're such a well run club. He's bought in at a time where his career is at an all time low, following all of the disaster class at Sunderland and all the documentary and whatnot. But it's indicative of like a really good culture where actually he can come in and he builds in confidence, and then he's given that opportunity and he's shining. He's a completely different player, completely different person now, having been in our environment. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't pick up on.
Jason Steele was a classic example of a player that, okay, yes, he did actually have to fight his way back from some sort of adversity, but the fact that even when he wasn't playing, he became a massively important player off the pitch as well.
No, 100% agree. I think we buy players that we believe will work in our club. They're tremendously well coached. The attitude that's around the group, I think, is good, and you can see the development. Steele's a classic example, but you talked about March earlier on, leading the Premier League goal scoring. Solly March is twice the player that he was 2 years ago, and he was still getting better from the Premier League than he was in the Championship, even though that certain people were giving him stick. You can just see how our players evolve, improve, and excel season after season.
Well, okay. Well, let's go on to last Saturday then, the game at Wolves, where obviously Solly March excelled, scoring twice. But there was three changes to the team that dispatched Luton the week before. Were you surprised to see that? I mean, it wasn't on paper. It wasn't as strong a team as I was expecting.
Well, what were you expecting?
I don't know. That's just the thing, because I was looking at it. And when you look at it, and then you look at the bench, and the bench is probably the strongest bench I've ever seen in my life. It was ridiculous. So I mean, it was. But then,
okay. So you know, the three changes. Could you just remind us what those three changes
were? Yeah. So the three changes were: we saw Webster, Gilmore, and Cizo come in for Van Hecker, Dahoud, and Pedro.
So what's your point about where we could have been in your mind could have been stronger still?
Well, it's just after all the plaudits that Pedro's been getting and the excitement that's been building around him, I was expecting our record signing to be in the starting lineup. So I was quite surprised when he wasn't. And then when you look on the bench and you see who else is on there, and it was just like, wow. You know, we're a team that's lost two of our best players, and yet we're still putting out squads like that. It's incredible.
I don't think that anyone should be blinded to the fact that a record signing is going to be there as an automatic starter.
I understand the logic on that, Al. But
yeah, I mean, they're there as a part of the squad. The fact that they cost the highest amount we've ever spent doesn't necessarily reflect their quality, because if that was the case, we'd have paid 500 million for Moises Caicedo. Of course, it doesn't work that way. It's all about, quote, the market. So,
have to remember as well is João Pedro is only a quarter of a Caicedo in real terms. So I think we should start using this new monetary
value.
I mean, you can't, like Al says, you can't put a realistic price tag on these players in terms of how they perform on the pitch, but it's just market forces at the end of the day in regards to that.
I go back 15 years, mate. It's the most basic one, and I can do this because I know for a fact it is a very nice, easy multiplier. We bought Glenn Murray for 300,000. We bought Nicky Forster for 75 grand. Does that mean that Glenn Murray is four times better than Nicky Forster? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It's just, you know, the value to a given club. So yes, João Pedro could have done a job starting the game. He went with Welbeck. He went for the experience. I've got no problem with that.
I think also, remember back to our 6-0 win against Wolves back in, was it May? Made four or five changes? No Caicedo, no McAllister in that team. Complete wholesale changes. You know, I think we just have such a strong squad at the moment that anyone can play and we're not necessarily weakened.
Well, yeah, Jason, I mean, that's 10 goals we've put past Wolves in the last two games against them. They must be sick of us.
Oh, they must hate us. And just as an individual stat, I've now seen us play at Molineux three times. I've seen us score 11 goals, pick up 9 points, and Wolves have two red cards. So I really hope they stay in the league.
Well, that was something I was going to touch on a little bit later on. We might as well do that now. I mean, last season, there was only one red card against us all season. And that was Semedo for Wolves.
It was a team we were playing rather than against.
Yeah,
us. Yeah.
But it was the first one again for this season, and that was another. That was a silly red card, but it was quite funny.
It was
wasn't
just
it?
Frustration. Is that? I mean, the point is you think, well, he's going to miss the last 90 seconds of the game, but then he's also going to miss the next game. So, and that gives his manager a headache. I mean, let's put it this way: if that was done down here, that someone gave away, you know, that was petulantly sent off. You know, once you're 4-0 down with a minute to go, you just have to accept your fate. So, you know, if someone did that down here, I think all four of us would be spitting feathers here.
Now, Tom, talk to me about Marvellous Mitoma, or Mito Maradona, as we're now calling him.
Diego.
Yeah, I mean, it all starts with Estupiñán's assist, right? nice little pass into him, and then he's left with an easy job of dancing past players and putting the ball into the net. But in honesty, I mean, what an incredible goal. I can't remember the last time I saw an Albion player dance half the pitch through and score.
Knockout.
I don't remember Knockout doing it quite like that.
The closest I can think of, and it wasn't a goal, would have been
against Derby.
Yeah, that's the closest thing you can think of. Runs 40 yards. He lazily smacks it against the bar.
Craig Conway against Blackburn.
AD, you're struggling here. It hasn't, apart from maybe Gary Nelson against Brentford. It hasn't happened.
What I love though, particularly about the goal, is the fact that the Wolves players know that they're in danger and are trying to pull him down. Yet he just shrugs that off and just that little drop of the shoulder and he's away. I mean, it was such a beautiful run. And I think where we were, I think we were probably quite similar in positions in the ground. Just you saw that run from completely behind and you just knew it was magical as soon as he left off.
Yeah, I was in JL7 and I had six rows back, so I was almost looking diagonally behind him, and he was fouled three times. You can see that in the replays. And people who are at that game might know who I am now, because I actually shouted, "Refi's been fouled."
Yeah, what do you know?
You would have expected at least one reducer in there, though, wouldn't you, really? I mean, it was very early in the game, just to let him...
Yeah. They were trying to pull his shirt off his back, but he was just too quick, too strong. Yeah. It was brilliant.
Because it's not often... I mean, it's not often that we see Matoma actually, go straight through the middle.
Seen him try to do it, and it hasn't always... if you remember back at Stamford Bridge last season... It wasn't quite from quite so far out, but he still dropped his shoulder and beat a couple of players. Mm. And I think the keeper made a good save. I think he did it against, was it him? No, it was Buonanotti against Man City. But certainly you've seen Matoma trying to do that. And this is the first time it's come off.
In the way that he took on the players and actually finished. But I mean, I suppose that if you're looking at the ways that he's cut inside, I suppose there was the goal. Everton and away at Leicester last season as well.
They're still different. He started off with at least half a dozen players in front of him. Now, the tactics of it looks bad defending from Wolves' point of view, but what the Albion have done is they've had their box shape in midfield, and this is where the Wolves' defence has got confused, and it's actually split, or rather created a gap between the two main central defenders, and it's that gap that Matoma has looked to exploit. Yeah. Now, as you say, they tried to take him down a couple of times. And the thing is, when you're 40 yards out and someone just then pulls you back, do you get a yellow card for it? Probably usually. But knowing full well, this is actually, if they'd have done that, that was actually stopping an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, because the rest of the defence got nowhere near him. And people have likened this goal to, hey, this is the sort of thing Jack Grealish would do. No, Jack Grealish would have thrown himself to the ground at the first touch, first time round. It's absolutely brilliant on every level from Matoma that he's actually evaded the shirt tug, he's found the gap, and he actually seemed to pick up speed as he was going.
Jason, have we seen the goal of the season in August?
Maybe. I'm loath to say that, having seen some of, Nsisa. I thought Nsisa might have got goal of the season against Chelsea, and then he beat it against Manchester City. So who knows? Someone's going to do a 30-yard overhead kick into the top ends in the 90th minute before the end of this season, the way we're playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's different types of goals, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, and to be fair, the second goal was a thing of beauty as well. I think that was the one with Gilmore's pass over for Nsizo to run onto, and the
third one.
They all happen so quick; it's confusing.
It was Marchie put Welbeck through.
Yeah. The Gilmore to Nsizo, and then the outside of the boot assist. Actually, in the stadium, didn't quite appreciate how good a goal that was. Especially as it was just kind of bedlam, but actually looking back on all four goals, they were all good goals in their own right.
Do you think Nsiso's been taking tips off Matoma, because that's exactly the same layoff that he gave Ferguson against Southampton at the end of last season, just that little sort of cross ball with the outside of the foot. It leads me to believe that neither Nsiso nor Matoma have a left foot worthy of the name.
Maybe. Good job. Their right foot is good enough for both.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, Al, last week, you said that the scoreline against Luton flattered us, and I disagreed. Did the scoreline flatter us at Bologna?
Do you know what? I think the four didn't, but I think the one did. Because I thought that Wolves were a lot better than that result made out. And certainly they had that torrid 10 minutes. From their point of view, they had that torrid 10 minutes.
The mad 9-minute spell,
We were on fire. And for all the fact that De Zerbi said, yeah, and when we got to 4-0 up, we stopped playing, I actually thought that it was actually the substitutions that he made immediately after the fourth one went in. I thought that upset the flow. I don't see why we couldn't have carried on for another 5-10 minutes. And possibly got a couple more. But I thought that Wolves' play... I thought they were very adventurous. They were strong in midfield. They ran with it well. Thankfully, they just can't finish. And I think that the difference between that and the 6-0, even though he wasn't playing for us, but in general terms, there was a Caicedo-shaped hole there. Don't get me wrong, Billy Gilmore is a decent player. but Caicedo, I think, would have probably broken down a lot more of the Wolves' counter-attacks and their attacks, probably more so than anyone else would have done. And we might have actually stuck eight away. But you can see, for me, that was a game where I felt that a replacement for Caicedo is needed fairly sharpish. Does that person exist in world football? Who knows?
Tom?
I think that's fair, but I also think when you go 4-0 up, you do earn the right to ease off a bit and allow the opposition onto you. I mean, you might as well do a bit of defending whilst you're there.
Well, just to be fair.
Yeah, no, just a bit of training. I think Wolves reminded me of us about 2 or 3 years ago, where the chances they created weren't clear cut. And that's why so many of them went. And some of the shooting, I mean, they definitely could get into a pot or two.
Well, that's what I was alluding to. That I mean, Jason, I mean, after we went 1-0 up, Wolves had 2 or 3, not just chances, but clear cut chances to at least equalise. I mean, there was a Fabio Silva who was clean through and goal, couldn't hit the target. You had Mike Nori, who again couldn't hit the target. Those both should have been goals. I mean, the goal was gaping for both of them.
Yeah, and they don't forget that they scored after about 3 or 4 minutes. The guy was 5 yards offside, but they kind of cut through us and scored. And there was a chance before Mitoma's goal, I think, as well.
Yeah,
I was saying to my son, it looked to me like they were. I agree with the Caicedo size hole. They were charging on the break through the centre of midfield, and they were also trying to pick out Milner's pace as a weakness and not attacking Estupiñán so much. I think that's why their chances fell on that left hand side to both De Silva and Aitnori. But they're finishing it. They needed not necessarily literal Steve Ball, but they don't seem to have a centre forward, and they don't seem to have anyone who can put the ball into the net at all.
Yeah, I mean, the scoreline,
they're not going to score.
If you listen to the Wolves fans after the game, they're disappointed. Yeah, they thought they were poor. I didn't think they were poor. They were only poor when it came to the finishing and far too often ran out of ideas. They got through us quite easily at times. And that's why I think that on a certain level, I know we stuck the ball in the net 4 times. They did it once. Therefore, it deserves to be 4-1. Of course, I know that's how it works. But in terms of, are we going to be able to do that again against the next team that isn't quite as good? Maybe not, on account of the fact that, like I say, they went through us far. I mean, Luton went through us quite easily at times, and that's... I do appreciate De Zerbi's sort of gung-ho attacking attitude and the high risk that he takes. I do get it. But there are times... There's time for candor, and there's a time for battening down the hatches.
Yeah, so I mean, here we are. We're talking about a 4-0 victory, and we did exactly the same last week, and yet we haven't even got out of second gear yet in these games, and we haven't really played against a team that is going to have has got a striker that's going to punish us, and you know, it's just a case of how quickly we can fill that void in midfield, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, but I think we also have to be realistic that whoever we buy probably won't be seen until after the September international breaks. They're going to need time to learn the system, time to get into it. And I mean, to be fair, as long as we keep scoring at least one goal more than the opposition, I'm quite happy with that.
6-5 can actually sort of upset the old digestion system a little bit. I mean, don't get me wrong, in that first 10 minutes against Wolves, we were on fire. We were unstoppable. Admittedly, when you see the match of the day analysis, you realise that actually they were still in the dressing room, frankly. But and we did what we've been so lacking doing over the previous 2 or 3 seasons of punishing teams when we've had sort of so many chances. And in that sense, yeah, Wolves couldn't keep up with this, and it was great. Unlike, so I'd still say that if that team had stayed on for another 10 minutes, starting team, I think another couple had gone in. But hey, you know, are we going to be greedy? We only score 4 at Wolves.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, I mean, that's what teams that win titles do, though, isn't it? I mean, they don't necessarily play brilliantly for 90 minutes, but they have like these 9-minute spells like we did, where they just take the game away from the opposition.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Teams that win titles are confident. They do score goals. They score goals in bunches, but they score goals. we don't look like a side that are going to go 90 minutes without scoring a goal. And until we get Caicedo in, maybe we're probably the best bet in the division to do with both teams to score bet on for a single match. But I would back us at the moment to score, as Tom said, at least one goal more than any opposition until you start getting into your sort of Man Cities and your Arsenals, and then it's a bit more arbitrary.
Yeah, thanks for that, mate. Get your money on 0-0 for Saturday then. Let's talk about Solly March then. Two goals in this game in front of the watching England manager. Obviously, as well as those finishes, he was instrumental in one of the other goals as well. Is he good enough to play for England, Tom?
Under Gareth Southgate, probably not. Because Gareth Southgate has this weird perception of what good is. But if you were looking at players on form, then he's got to be in with a shout of being in the squad. Whether he plays ahead of some of the so-called superstars of English football is another thing. But I think he's been superb under De Zerbi. I think saw a stat that said that he's now scored, was it 10 goals
since
he came in 28 games, and the previous 148 he scored 3. I mean, that's a phenomenal transformation.
Until his goal at Southampton last season, he hadn't scored for 2 years.
But I can't see. I'm struggling to see how that is down to De Zerbi alone, because we've always known, all of us here, ever since he first frowned his way onto the pitch, that, you know, there was a bit of a talent to him. There was a raw talent to him. And it's not necessarily that obvious as to what's happened, apart from his shots are going in.
I would fundamentally disagree with that. I would think under the previous two coaches, Houghton had us sitting back and had March playing far more defensively than he does under De Zerbi. Under Potter, he had to track back. He was played at left wing back on one occasion.
More than one occasion.
Been given license to play one position, which is that attacking position out on the right, to go for it, to get into the box, to not worry about it and try and get on the end of things. I think that's a difference.
I think as well, if you remember back to De Zerbi's first press conference, he highlighted March as one of the players he was looking forward to working with. And I think just that little bit of love and that confidence that De Zerbi's put into March has done wonders. And I think March has said himself, actually, sometimes you just need that little bit of confidence given in you to go that extra bit. And equally, maybe it's a system. Maybe the system is putting him in better positions to have a shot. And he's got that confidence to shoot, knowing that the manager wants him to shoot.
Tom, both the goals on Saturday came from lung-busting run through the middle and getting on the end of things, which is... Under the previous managers, you wouldn't have actually seen him anywhere near the middle.
Exactly.
Well, this is it. I mean, when you've got someone who plays out on the right like he does, then it's almost always the case that if there's the play is going down the left wing, they will cut in a little bit. They don't stay out there and snog the other touchline. They do come in a bit, because there's no point in staying out there. You're just out of the action there. Same when March is on the ball. You'll find whoever's on the left, whether it's Mitoma or Enciso or even a Stupinan, they're not going to be hugging the left-hand side, the touchline. They're going to be in that, what do you call it, inner channel, I guess, left channel. I don't know, but they'll be there, you know, far post sniffers. In this instance, in both cases, they were breakaway goals, in which case Enciso's on his bike and March is probably one of the fastest players. I mean, for both goals, certainly his first goal, he was the only one making the run. So if he hadn't have done it, Enciso's going, well, thanks, guys. So I think it's testimony to, A, it's what came across as something clearly they've been working on, because B, for Enciso to have to do the job on his own is, as you would put it, Jason, very Houghton-esque.
Yeah, who would win in a race? Who over 60 meters?
Between who and whom?
Al.
Of all of us, yeah. Of all of us, I'm putting my money on Jason. But I guess if he's fit, Tarek Lamptey would be the quickest at the club, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, quite. If he's fit. That's quite a caveat, that is.
But, okay. Well, okay. Well, I mean, it was a victory that was marred by conceding a goal, which was very avoidable. The warning signs were there. Jason still had to make a brilliant save to tip onto the bar for to give him the corner, which they did score from. But it was a case of comedy defending, wasn't it, really, Jason?
Yeah, we switched off. I mean, you can't give someone a free header there, and then we thought, I think, that they had an offside player impeding Steele, which they didn't, but that was kind of secondary. We switched off, and the guy, I think it was Korean
Wang.
Wang, thank you. Wang, he was just stood there on his own.
Mm. No, it wasn't clever. I mean, it was shades of Lewis Dunk's goal at Spurs, the legitimate one that they allowed. It was shades of that.
Not bitter, yeah. Are we?
Well, let's not go.
I don't know what Tom thought, but for me, it sort of went in slow motion as well.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, I thought that.
Yeah.
No, this is the funny thing is, it's not so much whether the attacker was impeding Jason Steele. That's kind of a moot point, and he clearly wasn't. But the fact is, he did wave his foot at it. And I'd be curious to how close he did get to it. And this is where I go back to. And yes, it sounds like I'm sounding like an entitled Arsenal fan. But if you remember McAllister's disallowed goal against Leicester last year, because Mwepu, his toenails were offside when he tried to throw himself backwards at a free kick coming in. Now, he went for it. And was judged offside for it because he went for it. Likewise, this bloke stuck his leg out. It implies he went for it. I think probably it would have been, from my point of view, even as a Brighton fan, I think it would have been harsh to have disallowed it. But no. Let's have some clarity in the rules.
I think they referred it, though, Al.
And
I'm not sure that Dawson was offside, having seen replays, although I've not seen the VAR replay with the lines.
Yeah, Tom?
I just think disallow any goal scored against us. That's...
Oh, yeah, no, yeah,
absolutely, 100%. Yeah, yeah. They're all wrong. They're all wrong-uns. But
what would be nice?
Well, it was,
sorry, AD, just one quick thing. What would be nice, you know, and our lesson to be learned from the first two games? Yes, very nice and comprehensive, but wouldn't it be nice to keep a clean sheet?
Well, this is exactly it. Well, technically, if the correct decision was applied in the Luton game, they wouldn't have had that penalty.
Well, but, yes. But you can't really say that about Wolves. You don't really have an excuse. I mean, Wolves,
no. I mean, well,
for the
Wolves,
most part, it was a legitimate goal.
Well, Wolves were good. They're
far
better
than
the ball owner, basically, like we said. But you know, six out of six, two wins out of two. It's a brilliant start to the season. Obviously, I mean, I really still love Mark Chapman on the Sports Report on after the first. The first week of the championship season, he was really. They gave it. They just done all the results. He said, "Someone's just given me a league table. They've played one game. I'm not reading it. I'm not. It's one game. So, I mean, technically, I mean, we're top of the league after two. It doesn't happen very often. Let's enjoy it. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast as ever. We're brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us a delightful shirt to have a look at. Who wants to have a go at describing this little beauty?
Okay, it is, for the most part, dark blue. It has... I guess you'd call it kind of peppermint green piping on the collar and the sleeves. It has a kind of a checkerboard diamond, I suppose, pattern, which just drifts back into the dark blue at the bottom and expands into this peppermint green / Brighton seafront railings colour. What's our third kit called?
Hyper Turk,
yes. It's sponsored by Postbank. It's made by Kappa. There's two stars above the badge. The badge itself is a diamond with too much Tippex on the badge itself. I have absolutely no idea, apart from there's only two clubs that I can think of that have a diamond. for their badge. One is Swindon Town. This really ain't it. What on earth would they be doing with two stars? Winning the League Cup in 1969 doesn't really count. And the other one is Hamburg, but the diamond is the other way up.
So, see, I know this one, I think.
Go for it, Tom.
Go on then, Tom.
Obviously, doing a bit of research around European football ahead of this season.
Really? Why would that be, Tom?
I don't know. There's something in the back of my mind about the next few weeks. I think it's Borussia Mönchengladbach.
It's definitely German because Postbank are a German company. He says he works in financial services.
And the way that I got to that was there's some German around the collar, Postbank being German, and then just something in my head said Borussia Mönchengladbach had the two stars and diamond.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, any idea of what the year might be on this one as well?
It looks reasonably recent.
I would say early noughties.
I'd say later than that, 2010s.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one of you is right. and here is what Phil has to say about this particular jersey. And actually, Phil, he didn't. He says, here is your shirt of the week. I'm assuming that Alan guessed the team. No, he didn't.
No, I didn't.
It's the 2015 to 2016 away shirt of Bundesliga side Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Well played, Tom.
Nicknamed Die Fohlen, the Foles, they were formed in 1900 and they play at the 54,057 capacity Borussia Park Stadium in the city of Mönchengladbach. Five Bundesliga titles are in their golden era, 1969 to 1977, which means they qualified for the Verdante Meisterverein and they can wear two gold stars above their badge. They've also won domestic cups four times and the UEFA Cup twice, most recently in 1979. The all-time top appearances goes to the legendary fullback Bertie Vokes. Yeah. With 419 league games between 65 and 79. And their former striker, Alan Simonsen, won the Ballon d'Or in 1977. A couple of notable players include Casey Keller, the American goalkeeper who played 80-odd times for him between 05 and 07. Lothar Matthäus launched his career with Borussia before defining his career with Bayern and Inter. And there's a few links to the UK, Casey Keller being one of them. He played for Millwall, Leicester, Spurs, Saints and Fulham in a 21-season career. And of course, there is a link to the Albion. Newly signed midfielder Mahmoud Dahoud played in the youth side before signing professionally in 2014, making over 75 appearances for Mönchengladbach before his move to Borussia Dortmund in 2017. After more than 100 games for BFB, he signed for the Seagulls this season. So thank you for that. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com, which is always well worth a look and peruse your to while away some time. Now, Alan, on the 17th of September, what are we doing?
16th and 17th of September, the Radio Reverb, which we are dangling our wit and wisdom on their airwaves. They can only receive funding through donations, sponsorship and grant. They can't accept advertising. So they're holding a fundraiser to raise funds for this actually brilliant community project, this community asset. So 16th to 17th of December, they will be broadcasting live, screaming at people to empty their pockets into their coffers. For our part, the Albion Roar, we will be live, as live can be,
in person and
not a photograph either.
Not on a Zoom screen.
Not on a Zoom. Oh, that would be nice. Sunday the 17th of September, 12 o'clock at the Hope and Ruin in Queen's Road. If you fancy popping down there to join us or to heckle us or to join in on the fun and games, please do pop down. But that's where we'll be. More details as to how to donate, we'll put that up there on social media and we'll let you know in the next week or so. But yeah, so it's the Reverbathon. 16th to 17th of September, and we will be at the Hope and Ruin on Sunday, the 17th of September, from broadcasting from midday till 1. So do pop down and join us.
It's going to be an interesting afternoon, as these things do tend to be, and I'm really looking forward to it, actually. It's been a while since we've flown by the seat of our pants, isn't it?
I had a feeling it was our last live show was actually the reverse.
No, it wasn't. 2020. No, it wasn't. The last show we actually broadcast 100% live was the week after, which was we had Paul Barber on the show, actually. And it was just after the Arsenal game had been postponed. Because the last... When we were doing that, we were talking about the Wolves game from the day before. Oh, ironic, right. So the week of that was like the last game we played before lockdown. So yeah,
okay, fine. I don't recall Paul coming into the open market. I mean, open.
No,
market,
he didn't. He was on the phone. He was on the phone talking to us about how the club were donating all the pies that were due to the Amex to the Brighton Food Bank and stuff. So
this is what, 3.5 years ago. I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
I can remember that, but okay. I can also remember what happened this weekend. Our Lionesses didn't bring home the World Cup, unfortunately. But it's a tournament that a lot of people, Jason, probably were avoiding, but an awful lot of people weren't.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd actively avoid football. Or, I mean, I'm not the greatest, world's greatest rugby or cricket fan, but I've watched us in World Cup finals in both sports. Obviously, I was going to watch an England final in football. And for me, I mean, what do they get? 12 million viewers, I think, for the finals.
This is the brilliant thing, and I love this stat. The BBC got 12 million viewers. This was also being simulcast on ITV, who didn't get as many.
Right, so you've got to add the two together.
Yeah,
and I mean, it brings it to a different audience. So my wife doesn't watch football very often. She very occasionally watch Brighton games if I'm not going and they're on the TV, just to humour me. But she's watched most of the Lionesses games, and it's reaching a different target audience. But anyone who loves football should be watching, because the football's been great.
What is it that Mrs. T appreciates about women's football that less so about watching the Albion, for instance?
I would say it's probably more watching England for a start, because she will watch England World Cup games for the men's a little bit. But she got properly into this. She was the one saying, we've got to get the TV on. We've got to make sure it's on at 11 o'clock. I'm sitting here, all of that sort of stuff, which doesn't happen when Brighton are playing, frankly.
No, I mean, it's something that's been picked up from. I mean, the zeitgeist from last year, obviously. I mean, previously you'd have had it where the European Championships and the World Cups would have been 2 years apart. But because of COVID, it was only last year. And I think that momentum has carried on. And even though the football was played at a spurious hour from our point of view, although actually even then waking up first thing in the morning and 8:30 in the morning, being able to watch the Lionesses is probably not necessarily a bad thing. But by the sounds of things, it was a brilliantly organised tournament. On the pitch, there was some great stuff. But the main criticism that people have levelled that I've heard about women's football generally has always been the goalkeeping. And I think the goalkeeping in this tournament has come on leaps and bounds, if you excuse the goalkeeping pun. And I think that Mary Earps, for instance, is actually a little bit of a national treasure. She was absolutely, completely and utterly shafted over by Nike.
Just to be fair on that one, and this is something that is, it's just as bad, to be fair. But this is all on Nike, and it wasn't just Mary's the England goalkeeper shirts. It was all the Nike kits that were produced for the countries at the World Cup. They did not produce any goalkeeping shirts for retail.
But my point still stands, is that is just something that would not happen in the men's game. I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, I mean, they're all templates as well.
And given that Mary Earps was one of the players of the tournament, it's the high profile. I mean, I don't care that Nike are missing out on it. I don't care that, it's bad publicity for them. This is an insult to... Well, one to Mary, and I'm sure she wouldn't want to have it taken on that way, but it's certainly an insult to the women's game that, there are people out there who still don't feel that the women are as important as the men in this. And until such time as that mindset changed, yes, men's football will always be more popular. Yes, it will always be better. But once you check your calling and realise that actually it's a different game and it's a different set of people that you're supporting, it's a women's team who don't aspire to be the men's team, but they do aspire to their popularity. And you're not going to get that all the while you've got the corporate elements in football holding them back.
I'm not really buying that, to be honest. I mean, it's the same sport. It's 22 people kicking a bag of air around a bit of grass with two wooden sticks at the end of it. It's the same game. It's just played by different sexes. It's equally enjoyable. Yes, the quality might not be as good as you go down the pyramid, but it's still the same game and it's still just as enjoyable. But my point here really is, though, is the fact that it has harnessed the imagination. People were getting behind this thing. And, you know, it's the fastest growing team sport in the country. And this is, that's not going to get any slower. It's only going to build and build and build on this. And, like, you know, this is, I mean, as we've often said on this show, we support the club, not the team. And this will have a positive impact on the women's team. And, you know, you can get a season ticket to go and watch the Albion women's team for 54 quid, 54 quid, 52 quid. It's amazing. So, I mean, go down and support this team. You know, we've got a Lioness who didn't play during the tournament, admittedly, Katie. But I think this is fabulous. And I would love to see a double header at the Amex one day. I mean, Spurs did it last year. I don't see any reason why we can't do
Actually,
it.
Actually, let me ask you this, AD. Did it work?
I have no idea.
Right, so... I'd like to know, as far as I'm aware, it works.
I haven't heard that it didn't work.
Okay.
I think it would have worked better if Spurs had won that day, but, you know, you can't have everything.
No. But I'll tell you, I mean, this is how ridiculous FIFA are taking the women's game. I mean, notwithstanding Infantino's ridiculous comments just before the World Cup final, you know, the best thing that he could actually contribute to this is either silence or, better still, his resignation. But as you know, that with the men's game, and this has happened, and I saw this, since 1954, the tournament location, the tournament hosts are decided anywhere between 6 and 16 years ahead of that tournament taking place. They still haven't decided where the next Women's World Cup is in 2027. How ludicrous is that?
But planning-wise, it's pretty ridiculous. Yeah, Tom.
Well, I mean, sorry, go on, Tom, yeah.
On that point, actually, did you see the news this week about the Women's Rugby World Cup?
Yes, that is coming to the Amex.
They've actually got their act together, worked out where the next World Cups are, and we get to watch some top quality sport again at the Amex then.
Well, actually, even then, I'm going to take issue with that slightly, Tom. That World Cup is in 2 years' time, and it's only 2 years ahead where they've announced the venues. Now, admittedly, even worse, I didn't know that the Women's Rugby World Cup was happening, and B, in England, and C, that the, you know, that they announced them. Whereas when it's the men's tournament, they have to have everything ready to go, know what the venues are going to be, know whether they've got to build a stadium 6, 8, 10 years ahead of. You know, Brazil had this massive building program for the 2014 World Cup. Russia had a decent, because they're given this lead in. Now, someone like England can easily host the Women's World Cup in 2027. But, you know, where is the infrastructure in place for them to actually, everyone to gear up and know what's happening next? Sorry, I'm running.
Isn't that slightly ridiculous on the Men's World Cup point, that there's an expectation to build new stadiums? And then these stadiums normally just become massive, massive white elephants, home to clubs that get a tenth of the attendance there, rattling around, making it hard to create an atmosphere. And it's just an absolute obscene waste of money.
Tom, I do agree with you there. But I mean, when the World Cup is held, I mean, I know that they want to try and take it out to places that haven't had it before, but when they do have it in established countries, like they would, if the England do actually get the World Cup again, the infrastructure and the stadiums are already built. They wouldn't be building any new stadiums. When they had it in France, they didn't need to build any stadiums. Italy, they didn't need to. Germany, they didn't need to.
Well, look, can I just point you to, in the direction of a couple of things? But the next World Cup is in USA, Canada,
Al,
and Mexico.
Can you sit forward, please?
Yeah. The next World Cup is in USA, Canada, and Mexico. So well done, FIFA, for wrecking the planet on that, because you can't get around without, you know, flying sort of, you know, 3,000 miles here, there, and everywhere. About as farcical as when they had the European Championship across the European continent rather than in one place. And look at someone like Australia, who's been screaming out to host the World Cup. They've got a little bit of a pedigree in the men's game now. They've shown they can host a World Cup. So why not give it to them? What's the issue with them? I mean, we're back to then, Jason. The farce that surrounded Qatar and you know, Saudi Arabia is going to be coming up again soon, isn't it?
You can guarantee, excuse me, you can guarantee Saudi Arabia is going to get a World Cup before Australia, can't you?
Yeah. No, it's...
I would hope not, and I don't think it will happen. It will happen. They will get it at some point, but they won't have it in the Middle East anytime in the next 10 years, in the next free World Cup swing, because it's got to go to Europe, it's got to go to South America, it's got to go to Asia, hopefully back to Africa as well before it goes to the Middle East again. But okay, well, we're gearing up. It's the last week of the transfer window, guys. We've seen two of our crown jewels already picked off. Hopefully we're not going to see anyone else leave, but we want to see some more people coming in. We have seen a couple of players leave this week. Yassin Ayari has now gone on loan to Coventry for the season. There's rumours that Facundo Buonanotte could be heading off to the Championship as well. Are we worried that we're losing too many numbers? Or,
well, I'd like to think the club has got this sussed already. That I think that they know their players and that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, Adela Fire as well is the other one I mentioned. I should mention. Who I'm actually surprised he isn't actually sticking around for this season. He's one that I've actually really enjoyed watching, Tom.
Yeah, but I think he's not quite at the standard yet to be pushing for a starting place, and I think that's where they want the squad to be. Everyone in that team should be able to start and confidently start in place of their counterpart in their position and it not impact the team. And I think if you look where that team against Wolves was, you could say that that bench, actually any player coming onto the pitch, was of the same standard or brought something slightly different to that. And I think that's probably where these players need to go out on loan, get some development, and then come back. And that model has worked brilliantly for us over the last few years.
Yeah, it has, Jason. And actually, the fact that, I mean, Ayari is another one which has been really, really hotly tipped, and he's gone to a Coventry side who could have been playing in the Premier League this season if they'd have got past the playoff final. You know, another team that is doing tremendously well.
Yeah, I think that model, as Tom said, just works. We saw it, you know, with Caicedo, with Adingra, there's a lot of our players that we've bought in and loaned out for the first full season. Coventry will be great for Ayari. Buonanotte apparently is going to Leeds. So I have my doubts whether that will be as good a loan. And they'll probably want to keep him afterwards, but again...
What are you saying?
He'll be our player of the season next season. Yeah.
But the point remains, I think, if you're not going to... Exactly as Tom said, if you're not going to be in that squad, ready to go, adding value, then get out there and play some, you know, 30, 40 games of football with somebody else.
Yeah, it's interesting that Sarmiento hasn't actually started for West Brom yet, actually. He's been warming the bench, so... Hopefully he'll get into the swing of things and get the 30 games which they want him to have.
Well, don't forget, he is just coming back from an injury. And one of the reasons that De Zerbi has sent him out on loan is that he wants him to get 35 games in plus this season, which he can't guarantee him in the Brighton side, especially with his fragile injury. So he's gone back out there to strengthen up and make sure he's got a full season rather than kicking around in the reserves. And I think all those who are being touted to go out on loan, I think that's where you see the writing on the wall, not for the future per se, but certainly for this season. that De Zerbi, for the most part, has decided what his first 20 will be, what his first 22 will be, rather than and if you're going to consider Ayari and Buonanotti as bit part players, who still need to learn and in order to contribute to something, yeah, they've all got potential, all got something about them, but what's clear is, certainly in De Zerbi's mind, is they're not there yet. Mm.
Now, Tom, we've been linked with several players. We can't. It's all rumours at this stage, and like I said, we can't really go in too much into details on it. But out of the players that we have been linked with, who's really caught your eye?
To be honest, I haven't really paid that much attention until Andy Naylor says it's a done deal, because he's been told so by Paul Barber. It's probably not worth listening to. But I think we all know the type of player that De Zerbi wants in terms of someone to replace Caicedo, and ultimately it will be what it will be. I get tired by all of the transfer rubbish and the talk and, you know, 24/7 coverage of this, that and the other. Someone's walked out of their door, so they must mean they're moving here. Ultimately, I think we have a good squad now. Anyone that comes in that De Zerbi thinks is better than what we have, that's just an exciting prospect.
Yeah. Jason?
I agree with Tom. We need a six. We need someone to come in and replace Caicedo. They don't have to be a Caicedo clone, because I don't think that player exists. I have seen a report or rumour on Twitter today about Lokonga from Arsenal, who I've not rated at all when I've seen play, but like we were discussing at the top of the show, we've got the coaches that will turn almost anyone into a better player over the course of a season. We need to fill the hole with a CDM. Who that is, I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, are you referring to the Albion vortex there, Jason, where like any player that leaves instantly becomes rubbish?
Yeah, well, that's kind of the reverse of it, isn't it? They arrive and get better, and then they leave and get worse. I really enjoyed Caicedo's debut for Chelsea in a sort of schadenfreude kind of manner. I would say in his defence, he looked very much like a player who hadn't had a pre-season, because thanks to his agent, he hasn't had a pre-season.
No.
Or he played in America and he's been training. He just didn't look good in that shade of blue.
This is absolutely 100% correct, Tom, of course.
No.
Obviously, we've been linked with the Labour from, is it Nice or Lille? I can't remember.
Lille.
From Lille.
The point is Tom said that the whole thing is just sort of tittle-tattle. It's barroom gossip. It's you know, knitting circle stuff. It has absolutely no value.
Okay, well, that's all we've got time for, unfortunately. So thank you so much to Tom Hylands, to Jason Thackeray, to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Such a feeling's coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see. Not a cloud in the sky, got the sun in my eyes, and I won't be surprised if it's a dream. Everything I want the world to be is now coming true, especially for me. Clear, it's because you are here. You're the nearest thing to heaven that I've seen. I'm on the top of the world, looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. Something in the wind has learned my name, and a that's telling me that things are not the same. In the leaves on the trees and the touch of the breeze, there's a pleasing sense of happiness for me. There is only one wish on my mind. When this day is through, I hope that I will find that tomorrow will be just the same for you and me. All I need will be mine if you are here. I'm on the top of the world again, down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. And the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put